accession number 10266, reel number 1.
Mr. George Bryce, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Bryce?
Yes, Bristol.
And what year?
1899.
What was your family background like in Bristol?
Well, I had father and mother, of course, and two brothers, one of whom was killed in the First World War, and the second one served in the RAF in the Second World War.
What did your father do for a living?
My father was in the coal industry. And we lived on the outskirts of Bristol, very, very near the countryside.
What sort of education did you get?
Well, I went to the normal primary school, and then in 1910 I got a scholarship to Queen Elizabeth's Hospital in Bristol, which is somewhat akin to Christ's Hospital, Horsham. We wore the same uniform, and I was there until I was 15.
And then what did you do?
And at 15, I was recommended from the school to the Imperial Tobacco Company, and I joined them as a junior clerk.
How did the war affect your work for the tobacco company?
Well, it meant that we had to work pretty long hours, half past 8 in the morning till 6 in the evening. And overtime, unpaid, was general. And we had an influx of ladies, because all the men had joined up, and that made it rather more difficult, because we had to train them as we ourselves, you see. And
were you supplying cigarettes for the troops?
Yes, we did a certain amount of export. The branch of the Imperial Tobacco Company that I was with was Franklin Davy and Company, and they had one very well known brand called Franklin's Superfine Shag, and we used to make that up into 1/4-pound flat tins for the expeditionary force, besides the normal local trade.
Was it good quality tobacco?
Well, it was, I put it this way, it was the best quality working man's smoking. You probably would have found it a little bit too strong. I certainly did. I couldn't smoke it. But we made other brands, of course, besides that. And
as you got up, when the time came for to join up on conscription, how was that? Did you sign on under the Derby scheme or any such scheme?
No, the couple of days after my 18th birthday, I had a letter from the War Office telling me to attend the recruiting office in Victoria Street, Bristol, for attesting. I had to attest. And whilst I was there, I expressed a preference to go into the Naval Air Service rather than into the infantry, which was what the bulk of the new recruits at that time were being pushed into, you see.
Well, why did you want to join the Royal Naval Air Service?
Well, for the very simple reason, my elder brother had been killed by then, and quite frankly, I thought if I go in the Naval Air Service, I haven't got to go to the trenches and my mother would have somebody to look forward to returning, quite honestly. And added to which, mind you, I had one or two older friends who were already in the RNAS, and in fact, then one of them was very useful to me after I joined.
What procedure took place when you enlisted?
Well, after the attesting with the usual swearing with the Bible and that, we were told to return home, and they would let us know when they wanted us. And a fortnight after that, I had a letter telling me to attend the recruiting office in Victoria Street to receive my travel warrants, etc., to go to the Crystal Palace for kitting out.
And that was in December 1917?
That's right.
What happened at Crystal Palace? Can you describe how you were kitted out, what they gave you, and how
yes,
you
got? Yes, we went in there, and the first thing they issued us with was a hammock and a mattress. And that was laid down by the side of Bill. And then they proceeded with the uniform, which was a blue uniform, breeches, putties, single-breasted jacket, grey flannel shirt with a collar and a black tie, and a pair of slacks to wear when we went ashore. In other words, we used the riding breeches for working in, and the slacks were used when we went ashore for on leave or anything like that.
You weren't trying to be a pilot, were you?
No.
Could you tell me what rank you were joining up as?
Well, I was taken on as an aircraftsman second class. You see.
Did you know what branch of work you'd be working in as an aircraft?
I hadn't got a clue until I went down to Withnow for the training.
In Cornwall?
Yes.
Had you done any training at Crystal Palace in December, or was that purely...
Oh, yes. They in between giving us out bits and pieces, they gave us drills and various things like that.
Basic drill?
Yes, basic, yes. Ordinary forming fours, etc., as it was in those days. And they had very large communal sleeping quarters, which you... And you slung your hammock along the bars, you see, and got into it. And until you got used to it, you fell out of it. but when I went to
Withnow,
we left the... I had with me an old school friend of mine. We joined together. And we left the train at St. German Station. It was pitch dark. We marched to Trigantle Fort, which was just near Ramehead. And we stood in the dark, waiting, and a couple of men came out from one of the buildings with the clipboard and the list, you see, and started down the line, calling out the names, you see. So it came to sort of Smith, Jones, Robertson business, you see, and it came to my friend who was next to me and said, Higby, and he said, here, and he said, Joseph, he said, yes, and I thought, that's a bit peculiar. He had asked the other chaps for their Christian names. Then he said, Bryce. I said, yes. He said, George. I said, yes. And then he went on down the line. I couldn't see, you see. It was pitch dark. All he had was a storm lantern. And he finally said, Higby and Bryce, stand fast. The remainder, right turn, quick march. And off they went. And we immediately thought that we were landing it in for some sort of a job, you see. And he came along and he shone the lantern in his face and he said, "I'll look after you two blighters." And he was a chap who was at school that was a couple of years senior to us. And he was the petty officer in charge of drafting. So when we finished our training at 3 weeks, he saw us again.
Hang on, before we come to that, what training did you do in those 3 weeks? Could you just sketch it out for us?
We did rifle drill, and we had shooting on the range. We had physical jerks, in which we had to take our coats and waistcoats and that off. But the main thing there was, twice a week we had a route march, which took us into Millbrook Village, the other side of Plymouth, and brought us out onto the coast road at Rame Head, and right along the coast road and back to the camp. And invariably, it was either pouring with rain or sleeting with snow. And I've never been in absolutely freezing conditions. And we were in wooden huts, which were not all that comfortable.
Did you didn't do any training in fitting at that time?
No, nothing at all.
Just basic training,
naval or military drill training. And the only other thing that stands out in my mind was the Sunday morning church parade, when we used to all line up. There was a few hundred of us there, and the officer in charge of the parade would say, "Roman Catholics on the right, Church of England stand fast, Methodists on the left, and any other fancy religions fall in the rear." We had a path from the camp down the cliff onto the beach, which was on White Sand Bay, and we used to do our marching up and down there. And we had a break, but it was only a stand easy. And during that stand easy, the chief petty officer in charge gave us a lecture on naval ranks and ratings, you see. And after he'd finished, he said, "Now I'm going to ask you some questions." And he pointed to a chap next to me and he said, "You, if you were in Plymouth on leave, which you ain't, and you saw the commander of the station approaching, how would you know he was a commander? What would give you the information?" So this chap said, "Well, Chief, he would have 3 rings round his arm of gold braid." "Yes," said the chief, "and what else?" And he said, "And a row of holly leaves round his cap." And the chief petty officer looked at him. I must remind you, this was just after Christmas, you see. He said, "Blimey, who do you think you're meeting, the Father Christmas?" Of course, he should have said laurel leaves, you see.
Now, you said your friend came in handy when it came to being posted from RNAS.
Yes,
with them.
It was through him that we were posted to Felixstowe, which was reckoned to be one of the better postings.
Why was that? What was reckoned to be better about it?
Well, it had been a permanent station before 1914. You know, the buildings, although they were huts, they had been there before 1914. And the principal duties of the pilots, and that there was anti-submarine patrols over the North Sea. And we were, and this friend of ours said, that's about the most comfortable station, he said, that I can get you into. So we thanked him very much and marched up to St. German's station, got on the train, travelled all through the night, and arrived in London at the end of a Zeppelin raid. And across to Liverpool Street, where we had breakfast, and the girls who served us with breakfast had been kept there all night because of the raid, and then on up to Felixstowe.
What was your reception at Felixstowe? Were you an aircraftman first class now?
No, I was only still a second class. Well, when I got to Felixstowe, I was put in one of what they call the working classes. That is to say, we were doing all sorts of odd jobs around the camp, nothing to do with the flying. I mean, for instance, one of the jobs we had was putting camouflage netting on the top of the hangars about 100 feet up, which I hated. And
what sort of camouflage netting was it?
Netting about as thick as my finger, and threaded through it were strips of canvas which we had previously painted in brown or black or grey, you know, alternately. And then when we had a strip of this ready, you see, we used to climb up ladders onto the top of it, get onto the roof, and fasten it in position, you see, over the top of the roof. Then
what other jobs were you doing in that first period?
Oh, and then the other jobs we did, which also I disliked very much, was cleaning down the aircraft.
How did you do that?
Well, we had buckets of hot water, and what we did, the tailplanes of the flying boats used to get covered in oil, which was thrown out by the engines. You see, it was before the days of everything being sealed. And one of our jobs was to take this bucket of hot water, in which had been put a generous handful of caustic soda, up a ladder to the top of the tail, and we had to wash all that oil off. A filthy job, and one which I disliked very much. But eventually, I had a stroke of luck. I had a letter from another friend of mine who was also in the RNAS, but had been posted to another station, telling me that his brother-in-law was in the experimental department at Felixstowe, and he had told him that I was there. And within a couple of days, this chap, who was a good few years older than I, he was a surveyor, actually, in civil life, and he came along. He asked me what I was doing, and I said, well, I was in Captain Carlyle's working party. Oh, he said, that's no damn good. He said, don't do that. I'll see what I can do. And about a week afterwards, I had a message to go to the duty officer in number one shed, which I did, not knowing anything other than what I was going for.
How long had you been there, by the way?
Oh, I'd been there then about a month.
So that would be in roughly February 1918.
That's right. And I saw this officer, and he asked me various questions, And he said, did you pass any examinations? I said, yes. I said, I got a second class Cambridge junior. And I had the, it suddenly flashed in my mind. I said, with a distinction in geography. So he said, oh, that's all I want to know. You report tomorrow morning to the chart room to Chief Petty Officer Penaluda. And I reported the next morning to Penaluda, the chart room, and he sent me, the first job he gave me was to do some tracing of maps. What they used to do, we used to draw these tracings of maps and mark out courses and distances on them, you see, and then they used to blueprint those and hand them to the pilots to use, you see. And after I'd been there about a fortnight or 3 weeks, Penaluna said to me, I'm going to recommend you stay with me, because he said, I'm hoping to I'm hoping to be posted to an officer's training unit, which within a month he did. And that left me a simple air craftsman in charge of the chart room of a station with about 1,200 men on.
So what was the full range of your responsibility then? What, besides, you'd obviously be doing more than just tracing out maps then.
Oh, yes. Well, we had the ordinary, the naval, large naval charts, you see, which we used. And there was a publication called Notices to Mariners, which was issued by the Admiralty every week. And you had to go through, it was sectionalized, and you had to pick out your section, and any alterations to the charts which were listed there, you had to make the necessary alterations. Like they move, for instance, they move a buoy, you see, perhaps a half a mile or something like that. And also, we had various models of German and English battleships, and we used to raise those on a plane and detail the name underneath, and then a photograph was taken of that and reduced to about 4 by 3, and the pilots were also handed that so that they had a means of identifying the difference between the two. And as well as that, we had all the wrecks and all the wrecks and the buoys which were in the Harwich area, which were, each one was different. We made drawings of those and photographed those down. And they also were given to the pilots, you see, to be used.
So they had a sort of little briefing pack of information.
That's right.
Maps, photographs, and...
That's right, yes, yes. And we were in conjunction with what was called the ship's office. And in the morning, when I went, commenced duty, I would receive instructions from them as to what they require in the way of information, charts, or what have you. Then I had to get on and do that, you see. Well, of course, as you know, eventually, on April the 1st, we became the Royal Air Force.
How did you react to that? What did you
Very
think?
Very badly.
Why? What was...
Well, first of all, I was in with about 11 or 1200 chaps who were all naval ratings, and we resented having to go into the RAF, and I would say probably 95% of us elected to keep our old uniforms, and we kept our old blue naval uniforms right up to the time till we were demobilized. And it certainly was not a popular amalgamation as far as we were concerned. And of course it took us a tremendous, it was quite a difficulty because, for instance, the chap who was what we call a three ringer, a commander, he became a major, you see. And we had to remember, although he was still in his naval uniform, we were supposed to call him major, you see, and it didn't go, it went against the grain all the way. I have a photograph at home of the mess that I was attached to, taken on Christmas Day 1918. And by that time, we had had an influx of late call-ups, men in their 50s. And they were all dressed in khaki uniform with, of course, Royal Air Force badges. And I have a photograph of a crowd was around one of the aircraft, and underneath it's got the riffraff, which gives you an indication of what we felt about it all.
Did the amalgamation change your duties in the chart room at all?
Not at all, except that they discarded the naval, gradually, they discarded the naval charts, and the RAF issued their own, which were, well, very much smaller and more convenient, to be quite honest, because you can imagine in the cockpit of an aircraft, you had an Admiralty chart which was about that big, and you wanted that little
yard
bit.
Big, yes.
The ones issued by the RAF were very much smaller.
About how big?
Well, they would be about, say, 18 inches square. And I did one job, which I left behind me. We had ferry pilots who used to bring machines to and from Plymouth and Portsmouth, Dover, Felixstowe, Yarmouth, right up to Scapa Flow. And I made a tracing of a continuation of these charts from Felixstowe right round to the Scilly Isles, and marked on it the courses and distances between the different harbours, and also made drawings of the landmarks that they could look out for, you see. And when it was finished, it was about that long, you see.
A yard.
And it was put on rollers. It was put on a roller so that the ferry pilot, when he was going on, could just unroll just the bit he wanted. You see what I mean? Yes, I did that.
How did you get on with the rest of the personnel and the various officers and?
I did very well. The man who eventually after Penaluna left, the officer nominally in charge of the whole job was the chap named Balding, Harold Balding. He was only about a year older than I was. and a delightful chap, no side about him at all. In fact, we were on very good terms because at that time in 1918, cigarettes of any particular brand were not in very great supply. But the officers' mess always had some, you see. But myself, as a member of the Imperial Tobacco Company, I used to get an allowance posted to me once a month. And when necessary, Balding would exchange cigarettes from the canteen for tobacco, which I had sent up to me, you see.